Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. I have Mateen filling in for Kasim today. And our guest today is Brian Gavin. So Brian, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Okay. As you know, my name is Brian Gavin. It's also commonly known as the Cutter. I am a fifth generation diamond cutter. I live in Houston, Texas, of all places in the world. And that's where the best cutting secrets of diamonds are kept, in the backyards of Texas. We're an online company. As I said, I'm a fifth generation, and I left South Africa 39 years ago, came direct to Houston, had a diamond cutting factory for a couple of years here in Houston. We perfected what's called the hearts and arrows cut. I have developed patents for maximizing light performance in diamonds, which basically means the best sparkle that you can get. I am the only modern round brilliant in the world that has a patent for maximizing light performance. We have it for a cushion cut, which is proprietary in the sense of its shape, and it has what we call the hearts and arrows effect. I can always go into that in detail later if it's a question. And then, of course, my latest patent, which is maximizing light performance in emerald cuts, which are quite amazing. If I have to say so myself. And that's the story. We designed jewelry. I was probably one of the first internet companies that went online long before Blue Nile, etc., and some of the other companies. But we specialized very much so in high performance in diamonds in that respect. So we're the Ferrari, the Lamborghini, or the Porsche GT3 RS of the business. Not at the price, though, but definitely in terms of the finished product. So that's taking more than 24 years of online and putting it into not even five minutes for you. So I hope that tells the story.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, I live in Dallas and I know many South Africans here. I don't know what it is about Texas. There's so many South Africans in Texas, but I was just curious. So you moved from South Africa. So you had a business before in South Africa and then you moved it to Texas. So what was that like and what made you want to move to Texas and start your business in Texas,
well,
or just Houston specifically?
The story is larger than that. And I think, you know, based on my gray beard, you can understand I'm a few years a little older than most people. But my wife, who I got married to, was from a country called Rhodesia, which is known as Zimbabwe. And she grew up there during the Civil War. When we got married, the apartheid system, of course, still existed in South Africa. And she ultimately said that she doesn't want to have children in South Africa, and she doesn't want her children to go through what she went through. So I, like a good husband, said, okay. I went to my family who were in the diamond business and who were cutting and polishing in South Africa, and were well known for their makes of cut, if I can put it to you that way. And so we basically said, listen, I'm leaving. So my father, of course, said, well, we're not happy you're leaving, but if that's your choice, that's your choice. You know, you're on your way. So I came on an exploratory trip first to the United States. And why we chose the United States is we really wanted to go where there was some family, because my eldest son, Danny Gavin, he was 6 months old. And so I thought, just to go to a place where there is no family is not such a good idea, especially for a young couple and a young woman who has a newborn. And so luckily, my wife's aunt, who's her father's sister, lived here in Houston. She said, come on, come to Houston. And, you know, we'll help you. Okay, so to cut a long story short, of course, we came. but we still had to find our own way. And, you know, Houston's been good. I love Houston because it's a small town in a big city, and you don't feel like you were in a big city in that sense. And it's just been good to us. We've had a good time here. It probably would have made more sense either to go to New York or Los Angeles in terms of the diamond business. But, you know, that's how it, what brought us here and how we stayed here. Like all good starts to all stories of emigration, somebody offered me a job at X amount of dollars, and I arrived and I started my job, and I got my first paycheck, and it was half the price or half the salary. I said, "What's going on?" He said, "I can't afford to pay you anymore. I'm going through a rough time." So it was rough in the beginning, you know, but hey, we've survived it. I fed my family. We helped each other, and we grew. And Brian Gavin Diamonds is not the first internet site that we did. I had another company. I'm not going to mention the name right now, but if people dig around, they'll find it out. That was the first foray in 1999 into the internet world. There was a thing called ICQ chat, which was really the beginning of the internet generation. And that's a long time ago when you think about it. You know, we're talking about almost 24 years ago. So there was very little technology. And how I got involved in the internet. I mean, is that okay if I just continue with this?
Sure. Well, I guess like for me, I'm just curious. I was just curious, right? Because like my family's also immigrants. They came from Belarus. So Obviously it's not easy, right? So I'm just curious because you were early on, you mentioned that you were struggling, you were looking for a job. So I guess like I'm curious more about like you went from that to building this business. Like where did that like... How did that happen?
Okay, right? So it was probably more difficult for your parents because they may have spoken English, maybe they didn't.
You did not speak English, yeah.
I always say that I had to learn how to speak Americanese. So, because of course I always said half characters and bathroom. Eventually I learned to say half characters and bathroom. So, so we got there eventually. People started to understand my language. And I think today I speak Americanese besides the Queen's English. So the first couple of years, yes, when it didn't work out in terms of the job that the offer that I had, I started a small little business cutting and polishing gemstones. So there was a lot of work to repair. And in those days, when you look at the Texas economy, it was quite buoyant when we arrived. It was just entering the oil crash back then. Then, of course, we had the savings and loan crisis and all those things. But it was different. I remember back then, I mean, I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but when I used to sell goods, people would give me a suitcase of cash and say, "Here you go," you know, and I would take $100,000 down to the bank, and they would open it up and they'd count it on the counting machine and they deposit it. Then all those laws changed. You couldn't deposit more than $10,000 in cash unless you had all the IRS forms filled out. And that was funny. It was a funny time. I mean, it was completely different, a different world. You know, when I look at that to today's environment, it was night and day. I mean, it's not the same America, that's for sure. But I started this little cutting business, and I was cutting away, and it was hard labor because you can only produce so much as an artisan, and everybody wanted to pay the price of the Far East. And of course, you know, I hate to use the analogy, but nobody paid me a dollar a day and a bowl of rice. And I wanted, you know, this wasn't for me. And so I went back to South Africa and I said to my father, "Ship me some goods and I'll start selling diamonds in America." And we did that, and I started selling diamonds. And when I think about in the wholesale business, in those days we used to produce a whole series of goods, which was called a site or a production, which came from De Beers. And we would manufacture that, and I would take it to some wholesaler in New York or I would say Los Angeles, and I would offer they'd look at it, and if the value was there, they'd either offer me more or offer me less, whatever it is. I got a check straight on the spot, and that was the business, which was a wonderful business because I could turn my money 10 times a year, and it was fantastic. But then the world started to change. And what happened was that that production, I couldn't sell as a lot. I couldn't come out. I would lose money on it. So I had to break that production up and I had to sell it off in different lots. It took longer. It became a different business. And then it became even more difficult. And of course, what was behind that was De Beers's ability to understand the pricing of material much better because of technology. And so they were squeezing the last drop of blood out of all the manufacturers. And they would favor some better than others. And some people, of course, got a better selection and they could come out. But we found it more difficult, more difficult. Eventually, I couldn't even sell those broken up lots. Then I had to go to jewelry stores instead of the wholesalers and say, okay, and try to sell them maybe small lots and or one or two stones. But you had a lot of competition in the market. And at that time, what happened was that you had the Indian market, which was becoming very strong, and they were growing in their strength in cutting and polishing. But they were sending over family members and they were giving long-term credit. So it became more difficult because we didn't have that facility to give long-term credit. So then what happened was it turned into a business called the Memo Program, which was really consignment. So you would leave $100,000 with a store, not knowing whether you'd ever see your money. And eventually I said, and that was around 1997, 98, and I said, no, this is not for me. There's too much change. Then I had a friend who was a professor of mathematics and computer science at the University of Houston, where he had tenure. And one day he wrote a program for my wholesale business, which we used to manage our business. And one day he came along and he said, Brian, look at this. Have you ever seen the World Wide Web? So I said, what's that, spiders? what's that got to do with spiders? He says, no. He says, I can take the computer and build this page and somebody on the other side can see what you write on it. I said, okay. He says, maybe we can put up a list and you can tell your customers to look. Now, there was no CGI scripting there. There was no order form. There was nothing. That was just a HTML page that you could see. Then, of course, a couple of months later, CGI scripting came, and so you could place an order, and we became schizophrenic. Do we want to be retailers, or do we want to be wholesalers? And what are our retailers going to feel if we start selling direct to consumers? So it was a crazy time for us. And some lawyer in Chicago, a consumer, found our webpage. And he said, he called me up. And he said, I want to buy a diamond from you. And of course, the only email we had was our AOL account. And so we started communicating via email. And he said, well, how am I going to pay you? I said, I don't know. Nobody's paid online before. I don't know how you're going to pay me. I said, well, look, I'll tell you what. You wire me the funds and I'll send you the stone. He said, but how do I know you're going to send me the stone? I said, well, you came to me in the first place. So either you you feel like you can trust me or not. So he said, I'll tell you what, I'll write you a contract and you can use it for other people as well. And that was my first internet transaction. It was a $30,000 transaction. The guy wired me the money and I sent him the stone. And that's what got me into the internet. Then I went to a friend of mine and I said to him, look at this. Isn't it amazing? I sold a diamond sight unseen. And he said to me, yeah, that's pretty good. And he was involved in the computer business. I didn't know much about computers. I know about diamonds. I know about jewelry. That's where my expertise lies. And so we decided to build a company, which was the first company. And it didn't have a very happy but life moved on, and that's how Brian Gavin Diamonds was actually created. And of course, all that technology came in one month after another. Then there was CGI scripting, you place the order, and then there was a thing that called PayPal. You could actually process payments, and it was the only payment situation that existed. And of course, it just matured and matured. And, you know, seeing the technology just sort of skyrocketing as and we land up in with AI today, it's, you know, I've seen a huge, huge jump. And then, of course, I mean, I don't know how old you guys are, but you look pretty young to me. And so I'm going to assume, you know, when I say CGI scripting, you probably were only 3 or 4 years old back then. I'm not sure. So I've seen a lot of it, and you know, it's been fun. I mean, it's been a real interesting journey, if I can put it to you that way. And awesome. Today, if we look at the diamond business, well, it's changed tremendously, because now we have the advent of lab grown. You know, our scientists and the technology has become where we can just grow them in. And right. So that is definitely, I think, having an influence on the business. It's not the first time that we've had synthesized gemstones. Rubies, emeralds, sapphires have been synthesized since the early 1900s. So natural rubies and sapphires and all that have all survived. I think the diamond business is in a bit of a lull talking about the natural. And that's, I think, partly the economy. You know, people say there's no recession. There is a recession, believe it or not. It's definitely people are not spending money. They can afford to spend on lab grown because it's cheap, it's inexpensive. And we still apply all our cutting technology to the Brian Gavin Premium Lab. We're coming out with a new product shortly, within the next month, which will be hearts and arrows. And also our premium lab are for those, let me put it there, the cut geeks, the guys who really want the premium of performance. So it's not for everybody, but it's for those discerning who want a guaranteed sure sparkle. And that's what we can offer. So the second product we haven't named, which we will release, it's very much like our Brian Gavin signature, where we have Brian Gavin Black in natural and Brian Gavin signature, we have Brian Gavin Blue and all those other ones in our array of brands. So in the lab, of course, we have Brian Gavin Premium, which is the maximization. The other good thing about it is all the Brian Gavin Premium, there are different types of lab that you can find, meaning when I'm talking about the growth, there's HPHT, which is a shortened version for high pressure, high temperature, which basically means that they take a seed and they put in carbon and whatever else, and they use tremendous pressure and heat to emulate that of the center of the earth. And the crystals are grown. The drawback is that they can't grow them very large, but they are very white in general. And then there's CVD, which is carbon vapor deposition. It's basically the same way they make computer chips. You have a high-tech microwave oven with a vacuum inside. And there again, you have a seed, and then they pump in the different gases, methane, carbon, whatever. And ultimately, the layers are grown layer by layer by layer. And then at the end of the day, you have a diamond, and they can grow those pretty large. But there's some drawbacks on that. And that is, if you grow them very quickly, then they can tend to be a little bit more milky, not as transparent, and the colors tend to be lower, into the lower color range, meaning more of the tinted colors. If you grow them slowly, of course, the cost is much more, because you still need that heat and you still need the gases, et cetera, and you need that stability. I did a lot of investigating in the different types of materials, and eventually I landed up, believe it or not, back in the heart of Texas. And there's a company called Clarity in Texas, which grows material, and they have a unique method of CVD. It's what's called a single cycle, because most CVD is grown in sort of cycles, because they grow it and they have to cool it down, they have to stop the production, and they have to clean the surfaces, because you have this black carbon which grows on the sides. But evidently our smart friends in the heart of Texas, in Austin, they've managed to not do that. And so we get a more transparent material, and we get much higher colors, which is uncommon because most CBD are lower colors because of the speed that they're grown. And they need to be treated by high pressure, high temperature in order to adjust the let's say the molecular structure, which closes up some of those valences, if that's the correct word I can use, and they make the actual crystal structure more harmonious, and they turn whiter. But with the clarity material, we have white colors. There's no treatment to the stones, and are as is. So at the moment, I have a mixture of HPHT and the Brian Gavin Premium. Going down the road, we won't have it. It will only be clarity material, and it will only be CBD in the premium with Brian Gavin's premium cuts. So that's what will be there. In the second new selection, which we haven't named yet, there we will have CBD and HPHT. There are lots of companies who talk about their precision cuts. Well, we'll apply our same standards there, not as perfect as the premium, of course, but it will be price orientated to compete with anything else on the market. And then the third category, which we have now as our second category, which is the select, will just be people are just totally price orientated and want price. So we'll have a three-tier product very soon in that sense in our lab. And of course, we still sell natural. It's a different market for us. But there again, we concentrate in custom cutting stones for a lot of people who have money to spend, who want something rare, who want something very specifically. And of course, you can just pick it off the shelf from the different brands, but it is there. So that's really the story of what's happened. And, you know, it's an amazing success story, because it just went from, you know, one step, it was success after success in our products and who we are. But today we're in a different world. It's a very, very different world. It's a different market. It's different technology. So I can't say I feel as comfortable as I did when I started in 1998 or 1999. It's different. And so I think I'm, you know, starting to get a little older. I need much more younger blood who are more, used to what's going on in today's market. Like guys like yourself, you know, it's, you know, I was.
Yeah. I was just curious. So, you know, are you looking at all, you mentioned briefly like artificial intelligence. So
yes.
Do you think that there is a big use case for what you're doing in the diamond industry with artificial intelligence?
Well there is. I mean, look, we're not always that far behind. I mean, I don't have a choice. I have to keep up. But yesterday, for example, we're doing an analysis of our sales, of our doing projections, those kind of things, and using AI. And, you know, it's amazing what you can, you know, throw out in 5 minutes would normally take you, you know, 4 or 5 weeks to have an idea. And then you realize that what you did was wrong anyway. I mean, it was amazing yesterday. I gave a certain result on sales. And I said to my son, I said, you know what, you see, I've been right all along. And then we did another analysis and it showed me I was wrong. So,
awesome. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
If you're right, you're not so right. And then the question is, you know, is the AI correct? But, I think it was correct. I mean, I think there's the interesting thing about AI, there's still a lot to, it's not perfect yet. And, you know,
100%.
It's a tool, and it's a tool to be used. I don't think people should fear it, but I think we should use it for its positive sides and how it can help us. And I'm sure it can help humankind. It can help mankind. And, you know, I think if it's used in its positive ways, it will definitely enhance man, hopefully in a positive sense. So
definitely. Well, Brian, I just want to say thank you so much for your time. It's really inspiring what you've been able to do. I mean, really a true immigrant story, and we're wishing you the best of success, continued success in your business. And, you know, definitely let's keep in touch. You know, we're also in Texas. I'm in Dallas. So, yeah, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, I'm sorry I spoke so much. I didn't give you guys a chance to actually
ask questions, but I
hear the story, so I told you the story.
I feel like you basically answered all of our questions, and the way, you know, I'm just like, okay, I don't even have to ask anything because you literally got into all the questions that we typically ask. So that's awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Well, it's my pleasure, and thank you for asking me to come on your podcast. I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right, thanks, guys. Brian.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, you too. All right. Bye.
Bye.